Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bertrand. All right, and I'm sure Psychic Tom will be popping in any minute. Got no guests for tonight, but got a lot of news to cover. I actually totally missed the UFC fight last week, but I did see the Chris Areola fight. I was rooting for him, but he kind of got snuck up on in that fight there. A little punch to the temple took care of his title hopes.
Yeah.
And this weekend, the biggest boxing match, of course, is probably the Adonis Stevenson versus Andrade for Fonfara fight. So we'll talk about that, of course. We had Matt the Immortal Brown taking out Eric Silva, as Tom predicted. We'll talk a lot about that later, but bottom line, it's another example of bad defense on Silva's part, even though a lot of people were, or at least the announcer there, Kenny Florian, who's from New England, and I've met a couple times. Kenny Florian kept talking about how much of a great fight it was. And maybe the first round was great, but after that, to me, it looked like a pretty one-sided beatdown. So, I don't know. I don't know if Joe Rogan would have been a little better there or not. But Kenny, I think, was a little off base. Well, Tom thinks it might be fight of the year, right, Tom?
Well, I didn't say quite to that extent, but I mean, if you look at what we've had so far, just on pure excitement, and to me, it got to the question of is Silva somehow going to hang in there? I thought it was just an amazing effort on the part of both guys. And I don't know, you make a very good point. The first round was competitive, but then that was pretty much it. I don't know if it was Silva's lack of conditioning. I mean, you hate to think something like that, or maybe it was just the beating he took. You know, what's that old cliche? Everyone has a plan until they get hit.
Yeah, I feel like, the UFC wants to be so much like the NFL. Well, the fans always start cheering, defense.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these guys don't know enough to do it themselves, put their hands up. You know, Silva, basically, his defense was taking steps back. Matt Brown was just coming forward with 1-2 punches, elbows, knees here and there. And Silva actually turned his back, the cardinal rule of boxing and MMA, which you don't do, turn your back on your opponent. And Silva kept kind of twisting away and running back. And, just saying, well, that's all I'm going to do. I'm not going to keep my game up.
Yeah, I've never really seen that work before. I've seen a few guys try it more locally than at the big stage, but you know how they'll turn and then try to somehow get some corkscrew momentum for a punch or a kick, but it just never seems to pan out too well at all. But I could say that I could imagine that's the building where that took place is the only live UFC I've been to, and I could imagine what the noise level was like there. It had to be just off the charts because the acoustics in that place are just the building shakes. So I don't think
a little bit of trouble in the first round. It was a very back-and-forth round. At one point at the beginning, Silva was in control, then Brown switched it up. And the first round was very competitive. But after that, I thought the announcers were laying it on thick, talking about how great a fight it was. Yeah, for Brown, not for Silva.
Well, hey, maybe they were caught up in the moment, too.
The announcer, especially as a former fighter, like Kenny Florian, like I said, I met him in person. A great guy, but at some point you got to make a comment on the lack of defense and try to see if maybe fans or people who fight and are watching the fights at the same time or as fans get a message across that that's not a good defensive position and this guy should do something about it. And he just got caught up in how much damage he was taking and still being able to stand and basically just giving him all these props just for surviving. Mm-hmm. Instead of geez, maybe this guy should keep his hands up. And there's a, not just your hands, but, you know, there's, if you go back through the history of boxing and combat sports in general, there's a lot of different defensive styles that you can employ. And I mentioned it when we were talking about Floyd's last fight, how he would slip in a little George Foreman block, and that works in MMA, too. And that's probably even a better way of defense in MMA, because if somebody goes and tries to punch you in the head and you put your elbows up, you're going to break their hand with those little gloves on. So it's probably even more effective. And the best guys mix up defensive styles, and they don't just put one hand up or both hands up. You know, they have all kinds of different methods. But definitely the turn around and take a few steps back method, that's not going to work against a guy like Matt Brown.
No, and like I said, I've seen guys try it locally, and it just they just never seem to be able to pull it off. But I guess Silva's, you know, what's the cliche in boxing? You can use your you move your head, you move your body, you can block, or you can rely on your beard. And I guess Silva was relying on his beard, but maybe he didn't let it grow quite enough.
He got a fractured jaw as a result. By the way.
You know, and I knew that the first round would be his best shot, that if he came out and gave it everything he had. And I kind of felt that if Brown would go through, if Brown would get out of that first round, I my crystal ball was right on the end there, but it was touch and go there for a few minutes.
The other thing, too, about Matt Brown's style that I've been wanting to mention, not only, you know, is defense crucially important, but mixing it up on offense. You got to look at these guys like Brown and like, dare I say, John Jones. They go out there and they use all points bullets in there. You got your fists, your elbows, your knees, your feet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Everything is going into the effort. And you see, the more guys that are picking up on that concept, the more they're inching closer to titles, like Matt Brown is now calling for this title shot. That's what it takes.
Well, you have to remember, Muay Thai is the science of eight limbs. That's how it's advertised. And Brown was sure doing a good job using all of them.
And I think one of the elbows, which he launched like almost like a right hook, I think. He was throwing some of those elbows to the jaw. The one that broke the jaw, I think, was a right elbow that he threw like he was just going in. It's to throw a punch to the body, and he came up and elbowed to the head. So look for that. Look at that technique and try to master that if you're up a fighter.
Boy, so this really leaves some questions on where Brown goes and, for that matter, where Silva goes. It seems like Silva's just got a missing piece of the puzzle in there, and I think you're right. It would start with a good defense. Because he seems to, he's not unskilled, but it's just one fight he looks just great, and then the next time out, just can't put it together.
Well, he looks great in the first round, but then that just caught up to the crowd's intensity and realized what he didn't need to do or what he was not supposed to do again to get caught, and it just dominated from that point on. Made adjustments, so. So it was actually the only fight I saw on this whole card. Because I had a little brain fart this weekend. I kept thinking on Friday night that it was Saturday. And Saturday night I watched the boxing match, but I never thought to, check on the UFC. And then Sunday I wake up and I'm looking at Sherdog, and everybody's talking about Matt Brown. And I'm like, isn't that fight tonight? I look on, there's happened. Oh, man, I'm sleeping at the wheel.
Yeah.
So, Costas Philippou in the co-main event beat up Lorenz Larkin. First round knockout. From punches, we got Darren Cruikshank beat Eric Koch by TKO. They had a unanimous decision by Neil Magny over Tim Means. Asoa Palele beat Juan Potts by first round knockout. Punches. Then we had Chris Carriasso beat Luis Smolka by split decision. Ed Herman beat Rafael Natal by unanimous decision. Kyuji Horiguchi beat Daryl Montague by unanimous decision. And Zach Cummings beat Jan Cabral by unanimous decision. And the final unanimous decision of the night was Nick Lentz versus Manny Gambarian. Lentz got the win there. And the rest was first round knockouts, all of them. Johnny Eduardo knocked out Eddie Wineland. Justin Salas knocked out Ben Wall. And Albert Tumanoff knocked out Anthony Lapsley. All by punches, by the way. All in the first round. The closest one to ending the round was Eddie Wineland before he got knocked out. That one ended at the 4:37 mark there. And, of course, the big upcoming MMA fight is Bellator 120, their second effort at pay-per-view. And for the second time, they had their main event collapse on them, unfortunately. But they've shifted gears. It's going to be Michael Chandler versus Will Brooks. Both these guys got one loss. Chandler's 12-1, Brooks is 13-1, and Quentin Jackson versus Mo Lawal is elevated to the main event. Jackson's 34-11, Lawal is 12-3, and I kind of had to agree the other day when I saw somebody put up a post, Emmanuel Newton should be in this fight instead of Jack Lawal, because he beat Lawal, you know, so twice. Once in the original fight, once in the rematch, I think. So that was kind of an interesting point. It makes you wonder what's going on there.
I think that's just kind of the whole grudge match angle that they're trying to work between Mo and Rampage.
Right. I think Mo's going down, for sure. Experience-wise, he just cannot hold a candle to Jackson.
Yeah, and that's Jackson, my take.
Jackson looks good, but at the same time, he's been a little rusty. He hasn't been in against the best guys. So Lawal has a chance, but just seeing him in a couple of different fights lately, he just doesn't seem like he's got it all together. When a guy like Emmanuel Newton can just toy with him like a cat with a mouse for a few rounds and win twice like that, and Lawal doesn't make any adjustments to control the fight, it tells me that Jackson's going to really have no trouble with him. Michael Chandler is supposed to be facing a totally different opponent. He's going to be facing Will Brooks, who can be really fast when he wants to be, can knock you out within seconds. So he's going to have to be careful there. Alvarez was in the news because he talked about how he was kicked out of this fight. He got a concussion in training. And I guess his head collided with somebody's hip in training. Trying to take somebody down, probably, and he said at one point in his interview, he said that it felt like his brain was bruised. Yikes. So he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah, I believe we read the same article. I guess Kenny Monday's wrestling practices with the black Brazilians must really be really go at it. I mean, yeah, that was...
The black Brazilians.
Yeah, The black zillion, okay, but whatever. I mean, it's
just the way they like to be called.
So you have to put yourself in that in Bjorn, you know, the owner of Bellator. You have to put yourself in his shoes. He's got to be wondering what kind of cloud is over these pay per views. I mean, lightning striking twice at the same time here. Well, we'll see what happens Saturday night to see what kind of numbers they can pull. It's got to be a bad blow for them.
But they managed to get Tito healthy enough to fight on this card. He's going to be fighting a guy who's bumping up in weight, Alexander Flamenco. He's got 50 wins, 7 losses. And Tito is 16-11 with 1 draw. And he hasn't looked good in his last few fights in the UFC, but then again, this is not the UFC, and Flamenco, I think he's been pretty much Bellator for a while. He's better at his own natural weight, and here he's bumping up, and used to train with Tito, so obviously he thinks he knows something other people don't about Tito's style. Maybe thinks he can beat him, probably can beat him, but who knows if Tito will surprise us.
Maybe he'll survive us.
What I was going to say. Maybe he'll do that, too. We've got Volkov, Alexander Volkov, 21-4, fighting Goy Ivanov, 11-0. It's like a Russian fight made in heaven there. We got Rip Rainey versus Michael Page. Rainey's 8-2. Michael Page is 5-0. We've got Czech Congo, 20 wins, 9 losses, 2 draws. Eric Smith is 6-1. We've got Marcin Held, 18-3, fighting Nick Jolly, or Nate Jolly, who's 13-5. We've got Shabulat Shamulayev, M. Night Shyamalan brother. No, he's 12-2 with a 1 draw, fighting Fabricio Deceased Costa da Silva. Say that 10 times fast. He's 19-3. We've got Mike Richmond, 16-4, fighting Goichi Yamauchi, 16-2. Austin Lyons, 10-3 versus Zach Underwood, 12-5. Justin Frazier, 6-1, fighting Mike Wessel, 13-7. Ben Brewer, 3-0, fighting Andy Ulrich, who's 8-4. And the last two fights are Anthony Lemon, 2-3 versus Cody Sheffield, 4-0. And finally, Brian Hall, 5-2 versus the pro debuting Cortez Ilia. So that's pretty much it for the mixed martial arts big shows this weekend. Out there in Texas, too, by the way, we're going to get to it a little bit later, but if you're not doing anything on Saturday in Texas, in the Houston area there, Ann Wolf is having a big show, a big amateur boxing show to highlight her students down there, and also to save the program. There's a big shortfall in the funding of her boxing program. And she's trying to raise money down there with this big event. So we're going to get the details for everybody for that later. Let's talk about boxing. I'm sure Tony's rip-roaring and ready to go. We dipped our toe in the WBC title while we're there.
You know, Tony, I was thinking about you Saturday night when I was watching Roa. You know, and when he would throw the left hook and not turn his hand over. And I kept thinking, okay, how does this work, Tony, in a Philadelphia boxing gym if you're not turning your left hand over with the left hook, huh? How does that play out in there?
Well, I'll tell you right now, Philadelphia is so in tune with the left hook. And, I mean, I don't know if it was just because of the Joe Frazier thing and then that kind of built it to be the trademark of that city, or if Joe just became the most famous of a city of left hook machines. But when I would train in South Philadelphia at my gym, they actually would have a heavy bag planted to the wall so you could either hit it with straight punches. Mm-hmm. They didn't want them doing that. For a guy just learning how to throw a left hook, they would actually shoot parallel to the bag. So if you not physically hit it with a jab or a knee, and they would make and you couldn't get wide with it because the bag was moving to where your right arm was. So it made you turn your body into it and turn the punch over. And you can have guys do that, I mean, literally round after round after round. I mean, I've seen guys kind of, there's many of you see them just throwing left hooks. Now, I have a drill that I use when I work out. Now, say I'm going to do work on heavy bags. I usually do one round to start off, and I clear that round with Asian. And I only put a rub on. And all I do is throw some jabs, 90% hooks. And, you know, sometimes it's just the one thing I learned early in my career, and this is something I've been many times. You hear me talk about this sometimes, especially when I was talking about the new Don and Mayweather fight. They would have you, like a pitcher in baseball, change the speeds up. Throw with a change up and then throw it with a fastball. And sometimes it goes okay. Throw a decent jab, you throw a soft jab like a fielder jab, you pick a hard jab, throw it with the right hand. So there's three jabs come at a different speed. Same thing with the stuff. Like, I'm fighting a guy. And I'm learning some left hook counters to his head. And I used to give it to a guy named Chad that I used to box with at Lock Haven because he would always be a sucker for my counter left hook to the head. And after landing about three or four of them, I'd go with a counter hook, but I'd go real kind of slow and I'd get him to go to defend it, and then I'd pull it back and see the call that he had. So, yeah, in Philadelphia, we put a lot of emphasis on that loop. We have so many little moxies and, you know, speakers and flickers. Pretty much everybody knows how to be left off.
Yeah.
I did not get to see the Ariola play. I was there for that night. I had to work till 10 o'clock. So by the time I got home, it was already well over. But I was at work until I was working. And we got home. I'm going to see him tomorrow night at the fight. And he came out and said that he was picking Stavarin by knockout. And one of the things he said was that Ariola was really strong. He's tough. But he was, and one thing that really turned him off about Ariola was, Ariola said that he wasn't a problem getting in shape. He goes, he's like George, he's like, I think you're a slap in the face. He goes, basically tell me right now you're wasting your God-given ability. That you're not having enough respect for the spirit for yourself to get in top condition.
And he goes, some dude was only ahead on 2 or 3 scorecards, and he actually was winning the fight up until when he
knocked out. Yeah, that's what I heard.
And he was actually using a lot of the 1-2 combos and just going right through Stavern's gloves. But it was almost like Stavern knew something we didn't. Like you said, that the conditioning was going to be a factor, but that actually, Ariel broke the hand after the fight. So, you know, there were multiple factors. I think he said in the 4th round he broke his hand, then 5th or 6th round was when it happened. He got knocked out, but basically he just couldn't rattle Stavern. And Stavern had no defense, but then, you know, after Ariola figured he couldn't knock the guy out, couldn't rattle him, and then had one hand down, it was like, all right, Stavern said, I can catch up now. And what took was one big punch for him to catch right up. And he became actually the first Haitian-born heavyweight titleist ever. So history was made. And it's also going to probably keep the title in North America because Klitschko already has a mandatory opponent he's got to face. This just came out last week. He's going to go up against some guy named Kubrat Pulev, who I had never heard of.
I've heard the name. I've never seen him.
He's 33 years old, 33 last Sunday, and... this is another Alex Lapai, I think. He's got 20 wins, 20 fights, with 11 inside the distance. And I guess he was a amateur super heavyweight bronze medalist from 2005. And he's fought Tony Thompson, beat him on points. But not much else on his resume.
Let's not forget, Tony Thompson is 42, 43 years old.
So it looks like it's going to be Stavern versus Deontay Wilder.
That's what I wanted to segue into. Did anybody see the video of Deontay Wilder beating up the internet troll last week?
Yes, that was everywhere. You couldn't miss it. It was like Deontay in the elevator with Solange and... everywhere.
Has anybody did any more research into this internet troll?
I did look at some of the stories and figured out, you know, what the beef was all about. I saw an interview that he did, that Deontay did with the guy I was at the Mayweather thing with out in Vegas, the open workout, and he's a pretty good reporter. He did an interview with Deontay, who explained that, you know, it wasn't just this guy was being an asshole. He was being racist. He was, you know, using racial slurs. He talked about taping his daughter's mouth shut and murdering him, the opposite. So, but,
well,
no.
And then I heard I guess Deontay's daughter has some kind of physical disability, and I guess the guy even got on that. I mean, that is so beneath the belt. I don't even have words for it.
Well, I will tell you what I found out. I did some more research into this, and the person I first heard about this from was Libby Cunningham. She's Steve USA Cunningham's wife. And I don't know if you guys know as well. I mean, I do because I followed Steve for a number of years, and I'm in Philadelphia. I've met talked to Steve. And he had to fight last month at the Philadelphia, at the Temple University in Philadelphia. They were talking about his young daughter. And Steve's young daughter is, in pretty serious condition. She was born with a heart defect. And I remember when we first got Steve on the show about 5 years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, that was one of the things that we talked about. His young daughter, who was about 2 or 3 at the time, has this heart issue. And now what they were saying last month is she's been in and out of the hospital, and they're worried that if they try to do a heart transplant, that she might bleed to death. And I know even though what Libby said the one day on Facebook is that they were in the hospital the one night, just a matter of weeks ago, and they were afraid they were going to lose her that night. Now, what Libby also said on there was this guy, Charlie Belanoff, was making threats to Steve Cunningham. And nothing came out of that one. But I did more research on this guy after watching the video. And I'm reading a lot of things where this guy has a mental condition. And some of it maybe he's schizophrenic, and some of it, he might have something that's similar to Asperger syndrome. It might be similar to what the Sandy Hook shooter had last year. But I watched some YouTube clips of this guy, and he's about 160 pounds. He's not a big guy, but he'll put on these videos that there's a, and he has a title belt, and he walks around, and he has the happiest number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world, and he's like, a boxer. A boxer doesn't make shit. He's put a record, 0-1. And the guy he lost to, he's like 2-25 with 23 knockout losses. And he said to this guy, and he just quit. So he comes up and he's going to tell Fuck, you're drunk. I'm 52-0. I'm whatever. I'm the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Well, when he got beat up by Deontay Wilder, first of all, he sucker-punched Wilder. And then he tried to run out of the gym, and they brought him back in. And then every time they did a square off, he was Wilder touching him, he would just fall down. And then he'd get up saying, I'm still the best, I'm better than you, and blah, 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 blah. And then Wilder chased him to the gym. But I found another clip. If you get a chance to find this on YouTube, it's sad, it's disturbing, and part of it's funny at the same time. Apparently, he somehow was about 4 years ago in a gym altercation with Floyd Mayweather Sr. Not junior, senior. A man around 60 years old. And they were sparring, no headgear on, and this guy is winning these wild punches. I don't think he landed a punch on Floyd Sr. And Floyd was hitting him with some counter shots. He finally hit him with 2 body shots, and the guy went down to his knees and literally crawled out of the ring. Floyd turns around, the guy comes back in the ring, and runs up behind him and tries to punch him in the face. And somebody in the gym, I don't know who it was, tackled the guy and said, beating the living hell out of him. On the ground, had him on the ground in the ring, punching the shit out of him. And then he was up on Floyd's face, everything was over, he said, I kicked your ass. Floyd said, what are you talking about? Like, you didn't learn to punch on me. He goes, you were crawling out the ring. I knocked you the fuck out. You didn't even land a punch. And then they're like, you ought to apologize. And he goes, I apologize for nothing. He talks like he's like a hip-hop kind of, he looks almost like a kind of Vanilla Ice, like a grungy Vanilla Ice. But the guy's got some serious mental issues. And the worst thing about it is he believes what he says, and he can't fight worth a shit.
Yeah.
My mother would knock him out.
Well, you've already given him 15 more minutes of fame than he deserves. Anyway, I was mentioning earlier. Her event is in Austin, Texas. I think I was saying Houston. And it's at the Backyard, May 17th. It's a bar out there, I think. And they need money. There's a website in the newspaper. If you look up Ann Wolf and you click on news in Google, there's a big article about it. And they need money for this program for these kids. She's a great athlete, and a retired boxing champion, so she knows what she's doing, and she's going to bring a lot of kids into the sport, keep them off the streets. So definitely support that if you're listening, and you got a few bucks in your pocket to throw towards this. Let's see what else we got. Oh, yeah, well, one thing we forgot to mention last week, John Doomsday Howard, former guest of the show, just signed a 4-fight extension with the UFC. I'll congratulate him on that one. It wasn't really big in the news media, but he put it on Twitter there and Facebook, so I caught it there. Another MMA story, UFC, former UFC welterweight champion George St. Pierre, is following in the same footsteps as Gina Carano. He's going to be in a remake of the 1989 cult classic Kickboxer. And Dave Bautista from WWE fame is also going to be in the remake. And the original film stars Jean-Claude Van Damme as the main character named Kurt Sloan. And this time around, it's going to be a guy named Alain Moussi, A-L-A-I-N. Not like the girl's name, Elaine, like on Seinfeld. He's a career stuntman.
And his acting was god awful. He's like, "Oh, yours, big face." He's like, "Dennis Schwarzenegger." He was like, "Who could be more robotic?" Schwarzenegger eventually got better. But he's like, "I remember Bloodsmith." He's like, "Hey, pal, I ain't your pal, big face." Every movie with Van Damme, he always had a scene where he's fighting somebody and they'd exchange six to the whip. Like, 12, and then he would just end up picking, and like, the other guy was a wither and he'd start picking him. Every Van Damme fight movie, I don't think there's one that he wouldn't do that in. Each one showed his impressive flip technique on how he'd get trained by this then master, and he would stretch the shit out of his legs so he could do a flip.
Wow. Sticking to the wrestling line of thought here, Brock Lesnar back in the news, not for what you think. There's more rumors about him coming back to the UFC, nothing like that. But he did make a phone call to Dana White, I guess you could call it a courtesy call, for his good buddy, Pat Barry. We talked a little bit about him last week. He got knocked the fuck out. It's a glory re-debut, I guess. Comeback fight, you could call it. Even though he really didn't come back, he went down. But Brock Lesnar called up Dana White and said, make this dude retire. And this is Dana White's exact words. He said, Brock Lesnar called me and begged me to make Pat Barry retire.
Well, retire from what? Pat Barry's not with the UFC anymore, to my knowledge. I thought his contract was up.
Lesnar thinks he's this guy's friend, but obviously he must think Dana White's a bigger friend.
Well, so what if he is? I really didn't understand that. I mean, Pat Barry's going to do what he wants to do.
Jeez. Right.
And you know, I mean, if he was still fighting MMA, I mean, but even then, if he has a contract, that sounded pretty silly to me.
Well, the only thing I can make sense of is, I guess, maybe because, you know, Brock knows that Dana White used to be an agent, you know? He used to advise these guys in fighting that maybe he knows better words. Who knows? But, you know what's going on with Dana White? We talked about this last week. Got a little issue with, trying to take on too much, number one. He's always trying to act like he knows everything and can do everything, so maybe that's part of it, too. But anyway, he said Brock Lesnar called me and begged me to make that Barry retire, and he said, I don't consider too many people my friend, and I consider Pat Barry a friend. Dana, you're going to get this guy to retire. And he had Dana's response. He said, I said, listen, he's a grown man, Brock. What am I going to do? It's different with guys like Forrest Griffin and Chuck Liddell, guys that I've had relationships with for a long time, guys who made a lot of money. That's the difference. You look at guys like Forrest. Forrest and Chuck are millionaires. It's easy to make them quit. It's a lot tougher to make a guy quit. It has to make a living. I don't want to hurt Pat Barry or throw a monkey wrench in his life or anything, but at the end of the day, the State Athletic Commission is going to need to step in and help a guy like Pat Barry retire. Or people that care about him. So, Dana White doesn't care about him either. So, I don't think Dana actually said anything about whether he tried to make a phone call or do anything about this, but that's apparently what he said to Bob Lesnar. As we learned from The Ultimate Fighter a couple weeks ago,
if it's not me in your corner, or somebody else that knows nothing,
knows nothing, so you don't really need him in your corner. But that's the other thing, too. Maybe that's why Brock Lesnar may ask Dana to do that, because maybe he thinks, well, like Chuck Liddell, maybe we could lure him out of trying to get another fight by giving him a position inside the UFC or something. That's what they did with Chuck. I mean, Chuck, I think, would have fought again if they didn't hook him up with a vice president of dicking around all day job. So he's got his own office and sits there, and he's a brand ambassador, and he gets paid to do it. Plus he does break commercials and Budweiser commercials. So what else do you need? Maybe Pat Barry needs something like that, the hook up there. So that's our Dana White story of the week. Not a whole big surprise there. Victor Valimaki has got a pretty interesting story in the Mixed Martial Arts news. He was just about to hit the comeback trail when he discovered he had a tumor in his upper chest. Less than a week before he was scheduled to fight in MFC 39 in January. He said it came out of nowhere, went to the hospital for a real sore throat. I had a bad strep throat infection, and that's when he got the news. He said they did a CT scan on my throat. They came back and said, by the way, if you have a tumor in your throat. He said, it's not a tumor. he said it was still obstructing my throat. They went in, removed it, and put me on a bunch of treatment. He had a little bit of a period of inactivity, but then he got right back to it. So he said, I lost a bunch of weight in the hospital, but it knocked a lot of sense into me. And when he got discharged, he redoubled his training efforts, and he was in the MFC 40 Crown Kings card against Bill Widler of Redding, California. And I don't have the results in front of me, but I was just lucky to be fighting and alive after this experience. He also added, this is the best training camp I've had since my early career, and I'm in better shape than I've been since early in my career, so I'm anxious to get going. And he's 32 years old, so lucky they caught that. Going for strep throat and find out, hey, I got cancer. What's going on?
Can I have strep throat last year?
Right. Speaking of, I guess we weren't really speaking of money issues here in that last story, but the Diaz brothers have been in the news bitching about how much money they get paid, and Dana White's been kind of slamming them into the wall with that, saying that, life goes on without you if you don't fight, so we don't give a shit. Well, now the women are starting to get restless. Former guest of ours, Misha Tate, coming out and saying she thinks she's worth a little more money. She's obviously a lot more classy about it than the Diaz's, but she's come out and said that she's due for a salary increase, and she's actually got only one fight remaining on her current contract. And she really didn't come out and kind of be a snob about it. She said, I do want to get paid more, of course. I think my stock's gone up a lot since fighting in the UFC. I think the contract that transpired when I was still in Strikeforce transitioning to the UFC doesn't reflect what I feel like I'm worth. So that's the whole process that has to happen. And she actually got $56,000 for her fight with Liz Carmouche for last time down there in Florida. $28,000 a show, $28,000 a win. It's not too bad for a female fighter and just for an MMA fighter in general on a main card. That's pretty decent money. But hey, she is a star, so more power to her if she wants more money. All right, now, guys, we've seen, I know you guys have been watching the news. When you watch the news, you obviously had to have seen something about this guy from the Clippers, the owner of the Clippers there, Donald Sterling. And so we have a legitimate story out there about somebody who's suspected of being a racist, right? Now, you contrast that with what's going on with Adrian Broner. Have you guys been following any of that?
Well, I know he's been suspended for this. He didn't set up another fight.
Yeah. And the worst thing he said, I mean, I don't condone swearing in a post-fight interview, period. I mean, we do it on the show. But when you're on broadcast TV, not broadcast, but cable TV, and you're talking about the fight you just had, I just beat the fuck out of a Mexican, it's just rude in general, but
yeah,
DC has come out and called it racist. I don't get this, just because he said I just beat the fuck out of a Mexican, just because he used the word Mexican, apparently that's racist. So they suspended him in part, I guess, saying that he could never fight for a WBC belt until he apologizes.
Did they sue him on
with what? Jose
Suleiman died. I know he died, but what was he before when he was alive?
Oh, he was the president, right? Of the WBC.
And he was Mexican.
Right. So I guess if you use the word Mexican, you're going to offend the WBC.
No, we're
anti-us. So basically, they're saying that he has to explain himself that it wasn't racist, or he has to make a public apology, and then they'll continue to rank him, because I guess they took him off their rankings too. Suspended him from their ratings and prohibited him from taking part in any WBC sanctioned fight. The suspension will be lifted if he issues an open apology. I didn't think it was that bad. I thought it was kind of rude and classless, but I would not call that racist. And not just because the guy's black either, He could still be black and racist. Well, I don't think anybody's proven that. You can't be. And obviously we're dealing with a different race than black here. We're dealing with Hispanic, so.
Yeah, and I could kind of see where they're coming from there, though. Really, what does nationality or ethnicity have to do with it? You want to fight?
Right.
I mean, it would be like a white fighter saying, "Hey, I just kicked the shit out of a black guy or something." I mean, come on, it's got nothing to do with it.
Well, yeah, I guess when you say it that way.
Yeah, if you get on anything like that, I don't see the place for it. You won the fight. Why bring ethnicity into it? I mean, it just kind of stirs up more. If you want to sell tickets, maybe do it before, even though that would be wrong too. But if you're going to do it before the fight, not afterwards. I kind of see where they're coming from.
Be like, I guess it'd be like if Shannon Briggs got his fight with Klitschko, and after Shannon Briggs won, he said, "I just beat that crack up."
Yeah, yeah.
That
Or the other way around. If Klitschko threw it right back at him and threw a racial slur at Briggs after the fight. I mean, you shouldn't be doing it before the fight, but afterwards, that's crazy, in my opinion.
Anyway, that's all the big news stories I've collected, but we definitely do have to talk about some boxing matches tonight. There's a couple big boxing matches like we talked about last week. Big main events out in New York, Brent Beach, Stevens Jodge, who's 12-0 with 9 knockouts, and Junior Anthony Wright, 10-0 with 9 knockouts. They're both fighting for the WBC United States Cruiserweight title and the vacant WBC International Cruiserweight title. And not a whole hell of a lot jumping out at me on the undercards there. But the other big fight tonight is on Fox Sports 1. And it's out in Del Mar, California. And it's a Golden Boy show. Antonio Orozco is the main event fighter. He's 19-0 with 15 knockouts, fighting Martin Honorio, who's 32-8-1 with 16 knockouts, and that's for the NABF Junior Fights Welterweight title. And there's also a 10-round Super Bantamweight fight on there with Manuel Amila, who's 14-0 with 5 knockouts. He's fighting David De La Mora, who's 25-5 with 18 knockouts. We had a big fight up in Montreal tomorrow night on ESPN2. Delvin Rodriguez versus Joaquin Alcine. And both of them have 7 losses. Rodriguez has 28 wins. Joaquin has 35. Rodriguez has 3 ties. Alcine has 1. Rodriguez has 16 knockouts to his credit. Joaquin has 21.
But he took a tremendous beating in that Boss Potato a few years ago. And that kind of leads me to believe I don't know how much he has left. I mean, that was a pretty vicious shellacking.
Also, 10-round heavyweight fight between Joe Hanks, 21-1 with 14 knockouts, and Derek Rossi, 28-8 with 14 knockouts. At the WBO European Cruiserweight title on Friday in Germany, 12-rounder main event, Nori Sapiri, who's 35-6, 20 knockouts, fighting Tomas Lodi, who's 13-1-1 with 11 knockouts. There's a lot of experience there. Let's see what else we have. Page 1. Going to Saturday now. Come on, Boxer.
I'm going to one card tomorrow night in South Philly. So things have become varying tonight and certainly get our feedback from it. One of our former guests, Joey DeRico, is in the co-main event. So I'll break that down the whole card a little bit later.
Yeah, I'm sure I have that on here somewhere. Let's see. Yep, here it is. 2300 Arena, Philadelphia. Joey DeRico is 9-3-2 with 3 knockouts. He's fighting Mark Rideout. He's undefeated. He's 4-0, 2 draws, 1 knockout win. So a little bit less experience there for Rideout, but Joey's got a couple more knockouts. So big heavyweight bout there. That's 8 rounds. We've got couple undefeated guys in the co-main event at light welterweight. Dean Nelson, 11-0 with 1 knockout, fighting Jerome Rodriguez, who's 6-0-3 with 2 knockouts.
And let me,
there's a guy out there, I think there used to be an MMA fighter, Josh Beeman. I saw him up in Massachusetts in an MMA fight.
where it's shown he's 5-16, 5-16-4 in boxing, which would make sense. Just a, kind of a low-level pros. He's fighting Milton Santiago, who's 4-0 with 3 knockouts.
Yeah, Milton Santiago is a pretty hot prospect. He's 17 years old. And it's funny because he is a graduate of Green Plain High School, which promotional is being done by Russell Powell. And he's been working with that young lady on the Brittany Rogers. And Brittany's also a graduate of Green Plain High School. Milton, for a young kid, 17 years old, doesn't turn 18 until September. He made his pro debut in February. So, he's 4-0 with 3 knockouts, all 3 knockouts, your 4th round knockouts. And his other fight, the length of distance, he's just, obviously these are guys right now, he's just starting to take care of the guy with 3 and 14 length of distance. But Milton won all 4 rounds on 3 of the cards and about 3 of the 4 rounds on the 3rd card. Tell me about the name of Josh Beeman, I don't know much about him. 5-16 with 4 draws. So once again, it's a guy Milton's trying to get a seat back. I'm most interested in seeing is the Naeem Nelson fight. I know Naeem pretty well. I see a phase out. I've seen him play a couple times. I've covered him. I've spoken to him a few times. I'm very good friends with his manager, Dave Price. Naeem was quick to get in the car about the whole way of theater. I think this is a really promising show. The one that we went to in casino, and he broke his hand. And I was talking to him, he had the cast on his hand. It was either that one or the one after that, but I remember sitting there and he had the cast on his hand, and he was, pretty disappearing, but he didn't get to fight that night. He did come back. This year, he broke his hand. January. He's 11-0. He's not much of a knockout punch. He's only got one profit loss. But he's a good, tall, lanky boxer. He's 5'8 and 135. So, guys got long arms. He's a good boxer. Boxes out of the conventional right-handed stance. And let's take a look at the guy that he's fighting by the name of Jerome Rodriguez. Jerome, he's 6-0 with 2 knockouts, and he has 2 straight draws. He's 6-0 with 2 knockouts and 3 draws. His last 2 fights were draws, including a fight with Daniel Giles Jr., who is a decent fighter, 9-3. And Darnell, actually, I'm looking at his record, if I want to just check something out on him. I covered Darnell before. That's why I recognize the name. And he was a pretty good prospect until he had 3 straight losses. And he also has a draw against Hank Lundy about 5 or 6 years ago. I think that Lundy honestly won, and it was a pretty bad decision. I remember watching that all 3 fights he had as a draw, and Hank won that fight pretty handily. And then he had 3 straight losses after that. So this should be a, Jerome has some, decent record. He's fought some good guys. And that'll be a good fight with him and Naeem Nelson. It'll likely give the distance and to see who the better boxer is.
All right. Well, we also have a Showtime card on Friday at Foxwoods. We've got a couple big fights, 8-rounder, 2 8 rounders, and 1 10 rounder, or 10 round main event. Joel Diaz Jr., 15-0 with 12 knockouts, fighting Tyler Asselstein, who's 14-1 with 7 knockouts. We also have Frank Galarza, 13-0-2 with 9 knockouts, fighting Sebastian Bouchard, who's 8-0 with 2 knockouts. We've got light middleweights, and then light heavyweights, Travis Peterkin, who's 11-0 with 5 knockouts, fighting Larry Pryor, 7-9 with 4 knockouts. And
a couple other cards here. We've got to go to Columbia to see the bomb. Don George. Donovan the Bomb George is 25-4-2, 22 knockouts, fighting Alexander Brand in the main event there, who's 22-1 with 18 knockouts, and it's for the vacant International Boxing Organization super middleweight title. And nothing huge on the undercard there. Except for a 10-round bantamweight fight. It's pretty interesting. Luis Melendez, 37-9-1, with 28 knockouts, fighting Hugo Berrio, who's 17-4, with 11 knockouts. That's for the vacant WBA Fedecentro bantamweight title. Say that 10 times fast. Fedecentro. That's the first. I don't think I've ever heard that. Fedecentro. Let's see what else we got. Check that page now. I said we got Adonis Stevenson that's coming up. We got to talk about that. What else do we have here? Wednesday now. Next Wednesday. I guess we are into next week now. Donna Stevenson fights next week. Whoops.
I wonder if we'll have a reading transcript by Sergey Kovalev.
Yeah, that's next week, I guess. Next Saturday, the 24th, on Showtime. So that about does it for this week's boxing news and events. I don't really have any other major news stories to jump all over either. So I guess we're going to call it a night a little early here. I'm going to bug out an hour early. Do you guys have anything pressing?
I don't have anything pressing, but you're telling me that I'll have a post-fight recap for you sometime either Sunday or early in the week, Monday or Tuesday. And you go to me, hey, anytime I get to go to the fight in Philadelphia, I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, it's a bunch of people that I know that I haven't seen in a while, and, you know, it's special, you know, because of the fact that this is one place, you know, that I know, you know, even if you're in a fraternity, but even though you're out of the fraternity, when you come back, you stay up in the open arms.
Right. Cool. We'll have fun, and we'll definitely post it up when we get it. That's all we got for this week, folks. Thanks for stopping by.
All right, guys, let's enjoy the fights this weekend, and we'll have more to talk about next week, huh?
All righty.
All right.
Adios.